Welcome to Scope It Out. In this edition, Dr. Smith will be speaking with Dr. Peter Wong. They will discuss the article, Cryosurgical Posterior Nasal Tissue Ablation for the Treatment of Rhinitis. This edition of Scope It Out is sponsored by Medical Center Pharmacy, leaders in topical sinus therapy for chronic sinusitis and polyp patients. Founded in 1990, MCP provides innovative formulations that combine steroid, antibiotic, and antifungal treatments. These medications are instilled directly into the sinuses using various devices. Successful insurance billing, thorough patient education, and prompt delivery are why physicians and patients trust MCP as their premier pharmacy. Please visit www.mcpnc.com or call 1-800-930-8785 for more information.
Hello and welcome to Scope It Out, the podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your host, Dr. Tim Smith, and today I'm very happy to be joined by Dr. Peter Wong from Palo Alto, California. We will be discussing his article, which is currently available in Early View online, entitled Cryosurgical Posterior Nasal Tissue Ablation for the Treatment of Rhinitis. Peter, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, Tim.
Good to have you on. I've been looking for an excuse to have you on the podcast, Peter. This article is an awesome excuse to talk to you. You and I and all of our listeners know that recalcitrant rhinitis can really be a significant problem for which we've really had somewhat limited treatment options, I think, when our traditional topical therapies have failed. And we also all know that this is a substantial patient population. This is not a small patient population, I don't believe. Certainly in my practice, it's not a small group. I've even on occasion considered performing something like a vidian neurectomy in these patients, but I've always been somewhat hesitant just based on the invasiveness of that procedure and probably the lack of really good quality data to support that procedure. And then the potential for the side effects, the dry eye thing concerns me a lot. So when I saw your paper, I immediately recognized that our specialty would be quite interested in this developing technology. So tell us, Peter, how did you come about your involvement in this?
I agree, Tim, that our treatment options to date have really been very focused on pharmacotherapy. And that is frustrating because, as I'm sure you've experienced, there are a lot of patients who are very compliant with the medication, but they simply don't work very well. So I did have interest in some of the surgical options, but like you and like many of us have been a little hesitant to pursue vidian neurectomy, traditional vidian neurectomy, even though there are certainly a case series out there that support it. Mm-hmm. But I have found in my patient population that patients do find the rhinorrhea to be a very significant issue, but aren't really that enthusiastic about undergoing a big operation or even having general anesthesia for it. I did learn about posterior nasal nerve section when I was traveling, and I visited some practices in Japan where posterior nasal nerve surgery is actually done much more frequently than it is here, and they are treating patients with allergic rhinitis as well as non-allergic rhinitis. And that was maybe 6 or 7 years ago that I became aware of that procedure. I started to do that procedure a little bit in my practice. Of course, it still required the general anesthesia, so patient acceptance was not high. But that sort of got me thinking about this problem and trying to figure out how we could do it better. And then I did meet the founders of Aranex, who had similar interests. And so I am a consultant for the company, Aranex, who makes this device that's a feature of this manuscript. And they funded the study as well. So I definitely want to disclose that I have that conflict of interest. And in fact, all of the authors on this paper are consultants for Aranex.
Okay. So when you met with them, they discussed with you this potential idea of developing something that might be used in the clinic setting under a topical anesthetic and might address exactly those posterior nasal nerves that you saw our colleagues in Japan addressing.
Exactly. I think the idea of cryotherapy for the nerves is actually not new. And like many things that we've seen in rhinology, the older procedures that may have been rejected have a new life when we apply endoscopic techniques to them. So if you look at the literature, you'll find descriptions of cryotherapy for rhinitis in the 70s and the 80s and some good anatomic studies studying this area and studying it as a target for not only cryotherapy but other ablative techniques. So this is not something that is brand new, but the idea of converting it into an office procedure with a handheld device that can be done under local anesthesia is new because in the past, applying cryotherapy required a large cryogen reservoir, was quite complex with the setup, and it really wasn't very practical for somebody to do that in an office setting.
Give us a play-by-play of the procedure. What does it look like in your office, and how do you go about the procedure?
In my practice, I do a lot of office rhinologic procedures. So I do this procedure in the context of a day where I might be scheduling other types of office procedures like turbinate reductions or polypectomies. I like the extra time that I can take to make sure that the patient's well prepared. And so I don't try to do this procedure in my regular clinic flow. That being said, for the patient, it's quite a user-friendly experience in the sense that the setup is very similar to an office visit. We do it sitting upright in a chair. We use topical anesthetics that we would use for nasal endoscopy, but they are supplemented by additional topical anesthetics. And I've also occasionally chosen to do a local injection with lidocaine, which I think may help. The patients are quite comfortable through the procedure, and essentially what we're doing is decongesting them and numbing them up sufficiently that we can visualize the posterior aspect of the nasal cavity. So this is an area that we don't really spend a lot of time in surgically or even diagnostically in the office, but that's the target for the cryotherapy. So you just definitely need to anesthetize and decongest the nose sufficiently that you can see this area. It corresponds to the posterior most tail of the middle turbinate as it's inserting onto the lateral nasal wall in the area of the sphenopalatine foramen. And that sphenopalatine foramen is really the target. It's where the primary posterior nasal nerve will emerge along with the sphenopalatine artery. And there are some other branches of the nerve that will come through other areas in the region that I think also may be covered by some of this cryotherapy, but the primary target is the area of the sphenopalatine foramen. So once we know that we can see that area well, then I put local anesthesia directly on that area, and again, a possible local injection. And then the device, which is a handheld device and a disposable device, is placed under endoscopic visualization into that area. The duration of the cryotherapy is 1 minute, although we have been looking at whether we can treat two sites at 30 seconds. The description in the manuscript was a 60-second treatment in one site, but that is still being evaluated as to whether that's the best way to deliver the cryotherapy. The device has a small balloon at the tip that expands slightly when the nitrous oxide cryogen enters the tip, and that slight expansion is not for dilation. We're not dilating sinus. This is different from a balloon dilation, but that expansion of the tip allows for better mucosal contact. So after 60 seconds of the cryogen release, you actually see ice crystals that'll form on the mucous membrane, and it's a literal freezing.
What does the patient describe during the procedure? Do they feel that? Do they feel a pressure?
You know, for the most part, they don't, I think, because the freezing is also freezing the nerves for sensation.
Yeah.
So it's some people will get an ice cream headache, which you might imagine, and since that's well described, so it's easy for patients to kind of understand that, and that is maybe a similar effect. Obviously, ice cream headache is just the cold stimulus from the transpalatal direction, so you could have a little bit of that transnasally, but it doesn't seem to be a lasting issue. And in the paper, we talk about some of the discomfort issues, which for the most part lasts for the first night, and then by the next day, things are much better. So then after the 60 seconds, you actually start to see the crystals start to melt, and we actually encourage a patient to breathe through the nose, so they're actually exhaling some of the warm air through, and that defrosts those crystals, and the tip of the applicator then is slowly released after all the crystals have melted. And when you pull back, you'll see the area of freezing, and there's really minimal bleeding or mucosal disruption if you wait long enough for all the crystals to defrost. And we do the same on the other side, and that's pretty much it.
What I'm envisioning is that at the end of the procedure, the tip is actually sort of frozen to the patient. And
it is.
You're thawing that and allowing it to release from the
It is. It's like sticking your tongue on a frozen ice pole. You know, you don't really want to do that unless you know that you can defrost it. So fortunately, we know that the body's going to warm it up. And one of the fascinating aspects about cryotherapy, which is in distinction to some of the other modalities of energy delivery, is that cryotherapy is fairly selective for its ablation of nerve and soft tissue, but preserving vascularity. And that's because the flow of blood is warm enough that it prevents freezing of the blood vessels. So you have a situation where you can ablate tissue and nerve without compromising the vascular supply. And so I think that we see that post-op where they get mild crusting for maybe a couple of weeks, but very little sloughing of tissue, actually. That was something that was a concern for me when I first was becoming more familiar with the technology. Are we just going to slough this area off? And
yeah.
You actually don't see that. I mean, it actually pinks up really nicely, even as you're observing the sort of the immediate post-cryo recovery, the area revascularizes very quickly.
And the early results of this, I mean, this is a, so we should give the caveats, it's a small sample, but the early results are pretty promising. I was a little bit surprised at the loss to follow-up for the one-year follow-up. The rate was on the higher end of what I would have anticipated. Overall follow-up was still pretty good, but in the context of a funded clinical trial, that was higher than I anticipated it to be.
Yeah, I think that's certainly one of the main concerns for the paper and something that we really wanted to be able to show better numbers in terms of our capture rate. We have discussed that in the paper where we are really careful about conclusions about long-term treatment.
Yeah.
And we basically try to project that based on that smaller number. But this study was initiated as a safety trial.
Right.
And tolerance trial. So I think the patients were not necessarily prepared to cooperate with a one-year follow-up. At least it wasn't required of them. As a result, they may not have been thinking that that's important for their participation in the trial. And that might be, and certainly the subsequent trials that have been planned by the company are clearly focusing on the long-term outcomes. But we did feel that because we had a pretty good number at 6 months and enough at 1 year, that points to the likelihood of sustained improvement, and it was statistically significant despite the dropout, you know, at 1 year. But we certainly want to back that up with larger numbers in subsequent trials.
I think you raise a good point. This study really was designed as the safety tolerability study. So I assume the company, this is a device, considered a device by the Food and Drug Administration, and so they're going through something like a 510 K pathway for safety and tolerability, and this is their first foray or one of their first forays into that aspect of the application to the FDA.
That's right.
And then future studies will be looking more at efficacy of the procedure, which I'm really hoping, Peter, because I just feel like this is such a nice setup for a randomized controlled trial with a sham procedure as the control.
Yeah, we've talked about that. We have not initiated that, but that's something that I have certainly encouraged the company to pursue, and I think that would really be the best way to assess outcomes in a controlled system.
Yeah. We've all, well, not all of us. I mean, the older you are, the more you've been here, but you and I have been here before where you have this really exciting technology with these early studies that show this sort of thing, and we somehow convince ourselves that we finally found the answer, but it behooves us to go through the steps and make sure that this plays out in some type of a controlled study.
Absolutely.
So is this currently available, Peter?
It is. The device is FDA approved. It's on the market. There is a limited sales team now, I think, that's been assembled by the companies. People who are interested in accessing the technology can either contact the company or one of the sales that are using it out of study. So it is available, yeah.
And so how would you pay for this in your office? How do you pay for the device, I guess? How do you bill? Is there a code?
Yeah, so this is, I don't think it has been fully worked out because it's so early in the application of this device. And, you know, without saying too much that will be misconstrued as coding advice, there are codes that cover ablative procedures in the nose. And I think that that has been something that has been one of the codes that has been evaluated by the company. And I think I probably don't want to go into it too much more, not because I have hesitation, but just because I don't want to represent any kind of coding.
And I've never had a guest of my podcast arrested or spent time in prison, Peter, so I certainly don't want you to be the first
yeah,
one.
Yeah, let's keep that up. Yeah.
What is the cost of the handpiece? The code, I guess, is for the procedural aspect, but is there...
Right. So I don't know.
Yeah. We're just too early. I'm asking all the questions the listeners want the answers
absolutely.
To, but we just don't have those yet.
Exactly. And I think that, you know, it's so early, but I think that this is something that is going to be vetted through additional research. But now that it is available, it's also going to be vetted through the experience of the community of rhinologists as well.
Sure.
And so I think, you know, I am generally very critical of new technology, and I think that we want to do the right thing when we introduce new technology and make sure that it's scrutinized well and that it holds up to that scrutiny through well-designed studies and better understanding of the anatomy and just scrutiny of outcomes, you know, in the real-world setting. So that's where this technology is going, and I'm excited about it, but I just like you, you know, I mean, I want to really hold a careful eye towards really making sure that it's tested well. And I think the company is interested in that as well.
That's great. I mean, I applaud you on that and the company on that for sticking to that. We all know that's a critical step in all this. Well, gosh, Peter, your research is really interesting, and I look forward to more studies. I would love to see a randomized controlled trial on this. I think our listeners would too. If the company's listening out there, that's what we'd love to see, I think. And I look forward to having you on the podcast, and maybe you and I can talk about that study at some point.
Sounds great. Thank you for the opportunity today, Tim.
Yeah, absolutely, Peter. Thank you, and I'll see you soon, okay?
Thank you for listening. Scope It Out is a co-production of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology and Wiley. All opinions in this podcast are those of Dr. Smith and his guests and do not necessarily reflect those of Wiley or of the sponsors.